Mistakes from our collective past are like any other. They require intervention, a remedy, to correct. They don't erase themselves over time. Author, Jonathan R. Miller. Bearing Witness, part of the Racial Reckoning Project, is a reflective dive into the week's events unfolding in this season of racial upheaval and, we hope, change. I'm Anthony Galloway, Executive Director of the Arts Us Center for the African Diaspora.
And I'm Georgia Fort, an independent journalist.
Jim Baer Jacobs and Reverend Pamela Ngunjiri are the co-directors of racial justice at the Minnesota Council of Churches. And they've been doing some amazing work around truth-telling.
It's good to be with you, Anthony, and Miss Georgia. I would say my hope lies in knowing that the work that we are seeing right now, the work towards justice, there is so much cross-pollination, if you will. There's so much intersection. And we've been seeing that really for the last maybe 5 years here in the Twin Cities. You know, if we're going to call ourselves agents that are working towards justice, that it can no longer just be a self-focused endeavor, that we have to, as a Native man, it does me no good if I can advance my own causes of justice, but Anthony, you know, you and your family are still in danger, when you're out and about. And we've seen this, right? I mean, I think going back to, was it 2014 when Jamar Clark was killed and the occupation of the precinct in North Minneapolis? I mean, that space was undoubtedly a Black space, but every night, you know, whether I was there in person or even just streaming the events, you know, I would hear the Native drum. I could hear it in the background there. And every time I was there present, I could smell the sage burning, you know, some of our sacred medicines there to bring about comfort and healing. And so these intersections are so vitally important, because this work can't be done in siloed communities any longer.
I'm in total agreement with you. I was listening and you started out talking about your hope, and I think what has been inspirational for me is the phenomenal occurrence of a unified front amongst people. And Jim Baer, you were naming that, and for me there seems to be a sense of a supernatural gathering of folks, a coming together of people across racial, social, economic, and faith lives for a common purpose to serve the betterment of humanity. And I'm a baby boomer. I've been here a while, probably older than everyone on this broadcast. And I can't ever recall. I remember seeing that somewhat in the civil rights movement, but I was a little kid, but I remember seeing a little bit, but nothing to the degree that I think that we are experiencing it now. So I think we're living in an amazing time, at an amazing time, that is pivotal to who we're gonna be in the next 10, 15, 20, 100 years from now.
Yeah. No, that is so, so powerful. And as a journalist, narrative is, you know, that's the center of my work. And so I think it's so powerful to hear you break down the language, and words are powerful. To me, what this brings up for me is just, you know, the things that the last year and a half has revealed. I think that there's been so many opportunities to learn, not just individually, but collectively as well. And so I'm curious to know from you, from you both. What have been some of those defining moments over the last year in your work? As I imagine, it has changed some, and it has been impacted by the things our community has experienced. What have been some of those defining moments for you over the last year and a half as our community has gone through this period of racial reckoning?
You know, so our Truth and Reparations program at the council was 100% a response to the killing of George Floyd and the months of racial unrest that we, you know, surrounded us in the Twin Cities. And so I think about defining moments. Brother Anthony, I think about when Dante Wright was killed in Brooklyn Center, and you and myself and many others were part of a response, a call for clergy to be present and hold vigil. And the space that we were able to hold and create as a sacred space for the family of Dante Wright to come together and remember him, to honor his memory. But also, you know, as you recall, I mean, we probably had a couple of hundred people.
At least.
There.
At least.
Yeah. And I know you'll never forget this. I'll certainly never forget this. But when Reverend Dwayne Davis gave the benediction, and I remember because it was just... not long after Easter, mm-hmm. correct?
That's correct.
And he talked about how we were in Eastertide on the liturgical calendar, and Easter's about a resurrection. And he equated resurrection with an uprising, mm-hmm. and this call to no longer be held in the chains that would kill us, but this uprising to... and he put it so beautifully, you know, he's not calling for people to cut up and act the fool and do all this, but he's calling us to get up, not cut up, but get up. And, it, you know, that was one of the defining moments. I know Reverend Dwayne very well, and I know you do too, Anthony, but I mean, that moment sits with me so beautifully, because here we were in this moment. We had, you know, we were what? 3 minutes away from curfew at about that point, and the call to get off the streets, and mm-hmm. all around us there was police presence and everything. Yeah, and it just felt like this incredibly holy and sacred moment to come together in response to a crisis that was facing our community.
You know, Miss Georgia, you may not. Have put it together, but that was the day that bottles flew at you as you were covering Brooklyn Center and the vigil, mm-hmm. and several. You were like in four places at once, and we were trying to track and see where you are and make sure you were okay. So I think it's interesting that you bring that up, Brother Jim Bear, because all of us were in different places of battle stations yeah. that day, all in proximity to each other, not even knowing that we were.
Right. Mm. Well, I always thank you guys for keeping me covered, because it definitely, there were some dangerous nights out there. And I personally feel blessed because I did get hit with a rubber bullet and walked away with just mild bruising. And I have other colleagues who, you know, there's one journalist who lost an eye covering a protest, you know. And so the intersection of this work and the faith community is so important, whether people acknowledge it or not. I felt it. And so I appreciate both of you and the work that you're doing and keeping our community covered.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, with special guest, Reverend Jim Bear Jacobs and Reverend Pamela Gungiri, created and supported by AMPERS, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org.
So I've just been here at the Minnesota Council of Churches for almost four months. So I'm still getting my footing in what we're doing here. But we're talking about the last year, year and a half, what were defining moments. And so for me, as a person who always has a lot to say, a lot of opinions and stuff, I lost my voice. And that has never occurred to me. So I'm a mom, I'm a grandma, I got two great grandkids. So in this lifespan of mine, I had never lost my voice before. But the events that occurred over this last year and a half, I felt like I lost my voice. But here in this conversation, what I'm figuring out is what I lost was my old voice. And the events that have occurred, I believe, has forced each and every one of us to have to figure out who we really are. So I felt like I lost my old identity, but the events pushed me or catapulted me to figure out my new identity and come up with my new voice. And I think that that is what has occurred for us as a nation and as a people, figuring out our new voice and our new selves and where we move towards, move forward. And then you talked about Reverend Dr. Dwayne talking about getting up and talking about this about resurrection. That's exactly what getting your new voice and your new identity is, being resurrected from the oldness, the dead, the stuff that doesn't work anymore. Instead of lying down and letting things happen, but getting up and becoming active and part of what is going on and what needs to happen from this point forward. So I lost my old voice and gained my new voice, my new identity. I gained the strength to get up. I and others and everyone else, I believe it's like we got a second chance. We got a second life, a born again type situation of being resurrected from everything in the past to stand up to do this new work. And we had to. This new work requires a new voice and a new identity and a new knowing who we are. So that's what I gained.
You're listening to Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, with special guest, Reverend Jim Bear Jacobs and Reverend Pamela Gungiri, created and supported by AMPERS, KMOJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit racialreckoningmn.org. You all, and I'll let you speak to it, but you all are embarking as, one, a Native man and a Black woman, right, in working in partnership in leading this area, which I think in and of itself is beautiful, and it speaks to something that we were speaking to earlier, the as you talk about the hope and coming together across these lines, right? So there's this solidarity in your intersections, both in terms of gender, in terms of race, in terms of age, in terms of all the things, intersections that we could check off here. But you all are undertaking the task here in September of actually launching events about telling the truth and being unapologetic in dealing with that from the context of faith community. And so tell us a little bit about that, because you're not just, it's one thing to just tell the truth in general society, but you going into the most sacred spaces where folks know that they're moral and right and just, and saying, hey, look at the reality of the situation. Like that's you playing with people's sacred lives there. So tell us a little bit about that work, because when you talk about having a new voice, I mean, that's a bold step.
Both Pam and I we're reverends, you know, serving churches, serving congregations. So we're insiders mm-hmm. to this conversation. In some aspects, calling the churches to accountability is easier than calling the general public to accountability, because we have the mandate of the gospel, which when you read it properly, demands of us to be people of repair and healing, you know? And so in a sense, you know, Reverend Pam and myself, we can come into a church with a prophetic voice, and if they're going to get all up and get worked up about it. All we got to do is say, look, these are the words of Jesus. The man that you are upholding as chief prophet, teacher, savior, you know, his very words from the Sermon on the Mount, when he says, if you're bringing your gift to the altar, your offering to the altar, and you remember that your brother or sister has a grievance against you, don't bring your gift to the altar. Leave. In other words, separate yourself from this divine presence. Go and make repair in that relationship. And only then, after you're about the work of repair, only then come back into the divine presence. And so we've never, you know, I grew up in church, Anthony. I grew up in church my whole life. I've never read that scripture from that perspective, that if I am going to call myself a child of God, a follower of Christ, Christ demands of me to make right my relationships with my brothers and sisters that have grievance against us. And, you know, it's no secret to everyone here that for people of color, particularly for indigenous people and African-American people, we have grievances against the white church as it is practiced throughout, you know, throughout our state and throughout our country. We have a grievance. We have a justifiable grievance. And so if you, you know, XYZ church are going to call yourself a worshiping community, you have to. The gospel demands of you to be about the work of repair and restoration and fixing that relationship. And so in that sense, it's almost easier in a church. Now, they don't like it, and they'll fight you, you know, and they'll argue with you. And we have all sorts of theologians that will be like, well, you're reading that scripture out of context or whatever. And I'm just like, okay, we can visit other scriptures. You know, how did Zacchaeus make right his relationship with the divine? How did he ultimately approach Christ in relationship? He had to leave Christ, go and make restoration for all of the harms he caused in his community. And only then could he have a restorative relationship with Christ. So, I mean, it's not easy work, but we stand firmly on gospel principles that our churches say are their guiding principles. And so, you know, we just come and light the fire and hold their feet to it.
I feel like there has been a little bit recently of, you know, kind of pushback on the role of the church, where you have people in the community who are feeling like the church is not playing the role that it was intended to play. Have you guys been hearing that at all on your end? And if so, what are your thoughts about that?
I've heard that all my life. Hmm. And I think it's legitimately so. I think it with good reason. I think we have more than enough evidence to say that that is true. That is true. As Jim Bear was talking, I was thinking, okay, so what is the good news? And the good news is that even though we have this problem, this situation, we also have the solution for it. And it's very succinctly said when in the scripture, and I don't do word for word, that's not my gifting, so I'll give you the gist of it, is when God said, how can you love me whom you've never seen and not love your brother or sister whom you see every single day? It's just that simple. Making a conscious decision to not make it about us, but make it about the kingdom and the relationships, because that's what it's supposed to be about. So all my life I've seen it. My experiences in churches as a female pastor, as I could tell some stories out of this world. So yes, we have the racial stuff, but we have the gender stuff too. And so, but you take all that and you put together, and that hurt and harm that has come from the church, Yes, it's correct. But guess what? There's a solution to it. And so that's where I'm landing. I think we're landing. We're going to be part of the solution. It's not that it's unfixable. It's very fixable. Is it easy? I didn't say easy. I just said it was fixable. But and necessary. So that's my answer.
It's just a powerful, it's so powerful, and it's something that crosses many different faith communities and faith walks, similar sentiment that puts forward and puts the focus on, as I borrow from you, let's the main thing be the main thing. I got to see early on, and full disclosure, I'm in the process of going through ordination myself, and one of my auntie mentor leaders in a community, you gave a sermon to a congregation, and I remember it because the youth came screaming out of there taking cliff notes from it. And you talked about the story where one of the disciples is needs to get out the boat in the middle of the storm and is too scared to, right? Needs to step out and walk. And it's something that has stayed with me for a while, because we get trepidation whenever we want to address some of the difficult things. And you just did something, and you just said, yeah, you know what, to Ms. George's question, you're right. And we get so scared of saying, yeah, we did some messed up stuff, or this past that we did, or the things that we supported or were a part of were horrible. You know, we live in a nation where right now more women will have experienced sexual violence in some way, shape, and form than haven't. That is just appalling, right? And that's something that we live in, and that whether you want to say it or not, I may be an upstanding person in support of all these things, but there are things that I have said and done that have contributed to that culture. And I need to be able to come to grips and come to terms with that. And just saying it, the sky's not falling, the world's not ending, my life isn't ending, but yet, and now we can get to the business of trying to repair some of that harm, some of the past things we've said. And so what you just said is that open door. And I got to ask, as we close up, I'm curious how you are staying you, how you are being you in this moment, in this season.
You know, Anthony, you and I have walked together through various spaces over the last 18 months. And where I have found myself being freely and fully myself, you know, because as a pastor, as clergy, in moments of crisis response, there is a public witness, there's a public persona. It's almost like a garment that we put on in these spaces. And I don't want to say it's entirely performative, but we have been alongside each other in some of those spaces. And I still remember where we were in one of those spaces. And then the very next day, you and myself and a handful of other clergy of color who were also walking through some of those spaces were on a Zoom call the very next day. And we could just all see our shoulders were slumped. There was just an exhaustion. There was just a tiredness. And it was a physical exhaustion, yes, but it was a deep spiritual exhaustion. It was an exhaustion that says, when will we stop having to deal with this, right? And there was just a holy moment in that space as everyone recognized, okay, we just need to be here for each other. And I have found such deep relationship. You know, I love being out there in marches and protests and seeing you and you know, we could list a dozen other people that we commonly see out there. And I love those moments, but what I love more is the moments when we're not marching and we just legitimately recognize that there is a deep abiding love, respect, and legitimate relationship that I am here to minister to you should you need, and you're here to minister to me should I need, and we carry each other. It's the bear each other's burdens, right, that we do that. And I think we, as Black and Indigenous people, it's part of our upbringing. It's part of our what we've come to know how it means to live in community. Because white folks use the word community, but you don't see it to the extent that you see it in black spaces and Indigenous spaces. And so, how I am being me is I have, as much as I would never want to relive the last 18 months and everything that we have witnessed and experienced, the deepening of relationships that have come out in these last 18 months are invaluable to me.
How am I being me? What I think I'll sum it up with three words. What the last 18 months have shown me is necessary in order to keep moving forward. And those three words are available, accessible, and willing. Available to do whatever is needed to be done to move this thing forward, to shift things, to help the new community that needs to happen, making myself available in whatever capacity. I, for taking this job, I had plans to retire in 2 years. That was my plan. I was going to retire. I was trying to think of Jamaica first and maybe Costa Rica and some other things. That was my plan. And then I found out about this job, and I thought, if you take this job, you're not going to be retiring in 2 years, sister, because there's work to be done. But that's okay, because my spirit has shifted and it has become more important. Instead of me doing what I want to do what needs to be done, and to make myself available to be a part of what needs to happen. That's what my calling is. So it was stepping away from myself and selfishness into who I'm being called to be. Being accessible then means making myself open and so that people are comfortable talking with me or approaching me as we're on this journey walk, to do what Jim Beer says, build these phenomenal relationships with people, because that's what it's all about. It's about us being in relationship with one another before we can even be in right relationship with God. And then the third one is willing. So we know these things. We know a lot of things, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're willing to do the work that comes along with it. And I have shifted and decided to be willing. So I've decided to be available, accessible, and willing.
I want to thank you all for coming on and being courageous and showing some of the work that you're doing, but also bearing witness from your perspective in this space. We always end our show with this quote that was brought to us by Miss Georgia by Dr. Joy Lewis. And so, Miss Georgia, I'll let you go ahead and get the last word and end us right.
In the words of Dr. Joy Lewis, may the revolution be healing.
This is Bearing Witness.
This has been Bearing Witness with Anthony and Georgia, a part of the Racial Reckoning Project, The Arc of Justice, a journalism project created and supported by AMPERS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, KMLJ Radio, and the Minnesota Humanities Center, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.